You've heard, just do your Kegels, but what if that's not what your body actually needs? What if the real issue is tension? How would you even know the difference? In this episode, Dr. Sarah Reardon is back to help us decode the confusing world of pelvic floor health without the shame or guesswork. Welcome to Mom's Guide to Finding Herself, where we share stories of side hustles and surviving while parenting young children. I'm your host, Chrissy Bold. Let's make motherhood less lonely and help you find joy in being you again. If you've ever paused mid-sneeze so you wouldn't pee yourself, or felt pain during sex but didn't know who to tell, or maybe you've just been told to just do your Kegels and hope for the best, well, you're not alone. Pelvic floor issues are incredibly common, but we are rarely taught how this part of our body works or why it matters so much to our everyday health. And that lack of knowledge, it keeps way too many women stuck in silence, shame, or solutions that don't actually work. Well, you are in luck, because in today's episode, Dr. Sarah Reardon is back, and she is on a mission to change that. In the last episode, she came on the podcast to share her journey to motherhood, and today she's here to impact and change ours. She's a board-certified pelvic floor physical therapist, founder of The V-Hive, an online pelvic floor workout platform for pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond, and she's a mom of two. You might know her online as The Vagina Whisperer, and her first book, Floored, A Woman's Guide to Pelvic Floor Health at Every Age and Stage, is coming out on June 10th. If you've ever felt like your body is betraying you, or just want to finally understand what is going on down there, this episode will help you feel more empowered, informed, and way less alone. Sarah, I am so excited to have you back here again today. We heard all about your motherhood journey last time, and now today we're going to hear about the work that you have done on the pelvic floor.
I'm so excited to be back. Thanks for having me, Chrissy.
Let's start with just the basic, with what is a pelvic floor?
So the pelvic floor is a group of muscles that sit at the bottom of your pelvis. So we can all imagine those pelvic bones we see on skeleton jammies that our little kids wear, and there's an opening at the bottom. Yep. In real life, kind of in our bodies, that opening is, you know, has a floor, which is made of muscles and tissues and nerves, and it's like a trampoline that sits down there, and it supports our bladder, which holds urine, our bowels, which hold stool, our uterus, which holds a growing baby during pregnancy.
Yeah.
And you also have three openings in those muscles, one where urine exits, one for the anal opening where poop exits, and then the vaginal opening for vaginal intercourse, vaginal birth, and menstruation. So the pelvic floor is working for us all throughout the day with support and peeing and pooping and holding in the contents of our bladder and bowels and with posture. But yet we don't often talk about it until there's a problem. And so I really love kind of proactively educating people, which is, you know, I wrote my book Floored, kind of giving women a guide to their pelvic floor health so they can really proactively take care of it and or deal with an issue that they're already experiencing.
Right. I don't think we realize at all every day how much our pelvic floor is impacting everything we do. I mean, just straight down to breathing. So
yeah.
What are some unexpected ways that your pelvic floor health impacts your overall health?
You know, I think, to me, I think it's the most important part of our body, because it really is connected to everything from, as we mentioned, like going to the bathroom, which we do multiple times a day,
yeah,
having sex, which, you know, in order to sometimes get pregnant, it's something that we really want to be able to do or have joy or orgasms or pleasure. It helps support our core. So it's connected to your abdominal wall and back muscles. Many people who have low back pain actually have pelvic floor issues, and they don't realize the pelvic floor is not contracting or strong, or there's weakness or tension in it. And I think some of the more surprising things are when people have issues, not, you know, the most common ones we would see are urinary leakage or painful sex or pelvic organ prolapse, but things like pooping problems, like if you have constipation or hemorrhoids or anal fissures, that's related to your pelvic floor. Sexual dysfunction, it could be pain with orgasms, painful sex, the inability to orgasm or leakage during orgasms. And then even things like we mentioned, low back pain or hip pain or weak core muscles, those are all connected to your pelvic floor.
It's so fascinating. I went to pelvic floor physical therapy after both babies. And now that I like know and I can like visualize what's going on, everything about my life has changed. Like sometimes I'll stop and I'll like think about how I'm singing a song. And what muscles are either pushing in or pushing out.
And
you don't see how it's all tied together. So What are some of the ways that we can assess ourselves for if we're having an issue? Because we might not really know.
Right. And I think a lot of women don't realize that some of the things they're experiencing could be related to their pelvic floor. So, I mean, I'll see a patient who's like, tell me about your menstrual health. And she's like, oh, well, I use this and I only use pads because tampons are too painful to insert. I'm like, okay, well, that's a pelvic floor issue. Like your muscles are too tense. So I think one, and I go over this in the book because I think the narrative has often been for pelvic floor exercises is to just strengthen, do your Kegels, keep it tight, suck it in, pull it in. And actually so many people have tension and they need to learn to relax their pelvic floors. So the first thing kind of goes based on like what kind of symptoms are you experiencing? Is it painful sex or tailbone pain or a hard time starting your bladder? Those may be related more to tension. Often ones related to weakness or pelvic organ prolapse or urinary leakage or fecal incontinence, things like that. The way you can assess at home is if you are feeling really brave, you can take a mirror. And I tell people, like, look at your vulva and your vaginal opening. Other people have seen this part of your body more than you have, doctors, partners, and do a contraction and see what the muscle does. Push and bear down like you're pooping or giving birth. See what the muscle does. Like, start connecting mind to body as to how the muscle functions.
Okay.
And then you can also do an internal exam using your finger and then squeeze and relax and push out, you know, having that finger in your vagina and you can feel the muscles. And then you can also assess how you're contracting or relaxing.
That's such an easy way to go and see if you're too tight or too are not tightening enough to try to figure out which area you can go. But tell me, what do you mean by relax? We are telling ourselves that all the time, but we don't know how.
Right. And this isn't a muscle that we can see, so we don't even know what it's doing. But the first way that you can really kind of relax your pelvic floor muscles is actually by breathing. So your diaphragm sits just underneath your rib cage, and at the bottom of the pelvic cavity is your pelvic floor muscle. So your diaphragm's at the top, your pelvic floor's at the bottom. So it's almost like a Coke can. When you inhale and take a breath in, the diaphragm presses down and kind of flattens, and then the pelvic floor relaxes. So the diaphragm comes down, the pelvic floor comes down. That's relaxing the pelvic floor. So just taking big, deep rib opening breaths, we call it diaphragmatic breathing, can help you relax the pelvic floor. The other thing is I tell people to kind of even do a contraction or what you'd call a Kegel, like you're trying to stop your urine stream. That's a squeeze, but then let it go. Can you feel that relaxation afterwards, or does it feel like it's still kind of hanging on? And then other ways you can do it are also by stretching. So anything that puts you in a squatting position, like a deep squat or a child's pose or happy baby pose, and staying in that pose for 5 or 6 deep breaths kind of relaxes and opens up your pelvic floor naturally. So, you know, if you do have a tense pelvic floor, which many people do, you're going to have a hard time relaxing, but implementing some of these things will kind of help you reset it, and that will become the new normal for you.
That's really great, because all of those you can fit into your daily life, and
right.
the breathing we need to do anyway. It
right.
will help us in so many different ways. Now, as moms will know, there's a lot of things that feel like they're normal because they're very common. Like today I was walking and needed to pause to sneeze just to give myself a little more support. Now, what's normal versus what are things that we should be really checking in on?
So you're not alone there. I mean, I have to pause when I sneeze and kind of contract my pelvic floor to prevent leakage. But
okay, great.
Yes. Even the vagina whisper has to pre-contract. So, but no amount of leakage is normal. I think we often think like, oh, a little leak with a cough or sneeze is okay. One, these issues will progressively worse. You'll start leaking much more frequently. When you're aging and you have less estrogen or you're perimenopausal, you won't have your hormones to help support you as much, and the incontinence will get more significant and severe. And then this is why 1 out of 2 women, so 50% of women over the age of 65 leak urine.
Wow.
And it's one of the number one reasons for admission to a nursing home later in life.
Yeah.
So I say this because it's costly to buy these products. It often prevents us from doing the things we like to do, like socializing or exercising or going for walks or traveling or being intimate with our partners. And it's giving you information that your pelvic floor can't support against whatever that force is, whether it's a run, a jump, a cough, a sneeze, a laugh. And so you need to start working on it. It's never too late, yeah. But the sooner you start doing it, the better.
So what do I do?
So I think first you'd have to figure out, what's your pelvic floor situation? Yeah. Is it tense? Is it weak? I would first start pre-contracting before a cough or a sneeze. So I call this the knack, where you contract your pelvic floor, like hold it in when you cough or sneeze. So train those muscles to turn on before that kind of incident. If you can catch it every time, great. The second thing is, if you do get like really sick and you're coughing and sneezing a lot, I actually tell people to use an internal bladder support. So there are things called pessaries. You can get it over the counter. One's called Revive, but you can even use a tampon. And like insert a tampon, and that like supports your bladder so it doesn't get pushed down as much. And then lastly, if you do have weakness, I would start strengthening, because these muscles support your bladder. And when they get weak or they get fatigued, they are not able to support that. And that's how you end up getting the leakage of urine. So start strengthening, use the muscles when you need it before a cough or sneeze, and use internal support if it's like a more chronic issue while you're still working on training the muscles.
It's so fascinating that you said if it's a weakening issue, because you think leakage, everything you said before about being too tense makes sense, like the constipation, the pain. But to hear you say that that could also be causing your leakage is fascinating.
Yes, because if you have really tight, tense muscles, they can't contract well or relax well. Right. So it's like you've got these muscles that are kind of stuck in this state, and they're like, and they can't close and contract. So oftentimes with women, we have to, or patients, I have to teach them to relax their muscles with stretching, breathing, even internal massage and external massage, and get their muscles more relaxed, and then retrain and strengthen them if there's a weakness issue. So it's kind of like if you were to walk around like holding your elbow bent all day and your bicep gets really tight, like it's hard to let that go, but you're trying to lift something and you're like, I can't because my bicep's so tight. So you have to learn to relax that muscle first, and then you can strengthen it.
Right. That's so fascinating. Now, you posted on Instagram not too long ago, because you just mentioned being sick, that one of the things that we're not doing ourselves any favors by is by blowing our nose while on the toilet. What are some common things that we're doing to sabotage our public health?
Oh, my gosh. So first of all, peeing is probably the biggest culprit. When you pee, I really encourage you to sit down instead of hovering over the toilet. Now, I know some toilets are really yucky and you're like, absolutely not, Sarah, I will not sit. But if you can, clean the toilet, line it with toilet paper, because sitting helps your muscles relax. It helps your pelvic floor relax, so your bladder empties better. Yep. The other thing is, don't push when you pee. I think as moms, we're always trying to be really efficient and, you know, get out of there as quickly as possible. Or you've got a kid sticking their fingers under the door or sitting on our lap even. So I'm like, just sit and breathe, because your muscles need to relax and your bladder pushes the urine out. Your bladder's a muscle and it pushes the urine out for you, so you don't need to push. Mm. When you push to pee, it weakens your pelvic floor over time. So sit, just lean forward and breathe, take some deep breaths, and your muscles will relax. And then if you don't feel like you empty all the way, like shake your hips, or you can stand up and sit down again and see if a little more comes out. And then lastly, it's go to the bathroom when you have the urge to go. So you don't want to go too frequently and go all the time, like, you know, every time you leave the house or every time you arrive somewhere, because you're training your bladder to be small and have to go more frequently. But also don't delay the urge so much. Then you over-tighten your muscles and it makes it hard to start. So every 2 to 4 hours is kind of the normal range to pee. And then obviously when you are peeing, don't blow your nose, just sit and chill.
And don't try to unload the dryer while you're doing it. Is that what you're telling me?
You can scroll on your phone. That's fine.
Okay. That's where I'll do my multitasking then, I guess. I want to talk lastly about, this is an important one, and I'm sure that it's something that you come across all the time, is the shame that we feel when we have pelvic floor issues, whether it's tension or weakening. It's tough. So can you talk about that?
You know, I think that this is probably, like, the emotional pull of this is probably one of the biggest reasons I ended up starting my social media account and writing this book, where I share so many patients' stories, and they had been dealing with pelvic floor issues for so long. And some of them, you know, when they finally worked up the courage to talk to a medical provider, they felt like they were dismissed. They felt ignored. They waited for years to get treatment. You know, I think a lot of this really goes back to when we are young women, we are not educated about this part of our body. We maybe get a little bit of period education, maybe. We maybe get a little bit of sex ed, depending on where you live in the country or, you know, where you go to school. But we're not taught about our pelvic floors. And so the vagina becomes like something just for sex or something that feels dirty, or we hide our periods. We slip tampons up our shirt sleeves. And I think we've always been kind of taught indirectly to cover this up, to not talk about it, to feel ashamed about it. That it's almost dirty in some ways. And I think that that prevents us from having really open conversations. I think that medical providers aren't proactive enough about asking about them. Like, the research is very clear. If a medical provider does not ask about leakage or sexual pain or anything like that, then we're not going to offer it up.
Yeah.
And we don't even know what doctor to talk to sometimes. So I think that my goal of all of this is to really help normalize pelvic floor conversation so that we can talk about these things and then get solutions. But if we are normalizing the problems, which I think has been the case for so long, of like it just an aisle of light incontinence liners, or, you know, surgery is the only option, or just kind of hiding it and dealing with it, then I think that, you know, we're really just not getting the help that we deserve. Yeah. And we need to normalize the conversations instead of normalizing the problems.
That's so interesting, because you're right. You know, you talk to your doctors, and depending on the doctor you have, this may be a foreign concept to them. I know that one of my OBs, after I had my first baby, he didn't even know what pelvic floor physical therapy was. He was like, oh, sure, you could get physical therapy if you really think you need to. And I was like, dude, no, that's not what I'm talking about. My friend on Instagram who does
tell him, I'm like, show him my account. I don't care. Like, exactly. But they don't know what they don't know. They've been generations of physicians who weren't trained on this in their residencies. And, you know, I think a lot of it is people like yourself going to a doctor and asking for it, which takes so much courage, that helps a light bulb go off in their head and say, oh, I didn't even know that this was a thing. And then the ripples of them kind of learning and referring other patients goes a long way. But, you know, there's a statistic that at 6 weeks post-birth, for vaginal births, your pelvic floor has 50%, less than 50% of the strength it did pre-pregnancy.
Whoa.
And at 6 weeks postpartum is when we're sent back to the gym or to having sex, or we probably are already back at work. I'm like, you're literally giving women the thumbs up to return to their quote-unquote normal activities, and yet their pelvic floor is functioning at 50%. Like, you should absolutely have rehab after giving birth, regardless of which method you birth, because both C-section and vaginal birth moms have pelvic floor changes. So we're just doing women a real disservice. And I think it affects how women birth, how many kids they want to have, how they exercise, how they work. And so we really need to, I think, one, demystify this part of our body, and be proactive about giving women the care that they need to recover.
Right, because they're... the things that we're experiencing, the symptoms, are really shameful in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, you're peeing yourself, you're pooping yourself, you have pain and sex. We don't talk about any of these things.
I know.
Like, all of them make us feel like we're doing something wrong. So to be able to admit that takes a lot, like you said, a lot of courage, a lot of guts to go out there and start talking about it. But then the next piece of the puzzle is, not all pelvic floor therapists are created equal.
Right.
I went to a couple, and I feel like every time insurance covers them, it's a whole other ball game, where I was on the table, and she was in a room, just an open physical therapy room. And she's like, are you doing a Kegel? I'm like, I don't know. I think I might be.
That's your job to tell me.
Right. And this was not the only one. I went to several to try to find the right fit, and I finally did, thank goodness. But if you just went to that first physical therapist, or even the second one I went to, and you didn't have the Vagina Whisperer on your Instagram feed telling you that this is not the right practice, this is not how we do it, you wouldn't necessarily know, and you probably wouldn't try again. So can you tell us, what can we look for, or what questions might we ask before we're making that first appointment?
You know, I'm so glad you brought this up, because you're totally right. Just like, no two doctors are the same. And I tell people all the time, like, no two physical therapists are the same. And I think that because pelvic floor health and therapy is getting buzzier, more people want to do it, but they really don't have the training to do it. So I think the first thing is when you call them, I would ask them, I would look at their website, I would read their reviews, and then I would call the clinic and ask them like, hey, I'm a pregnant woman. I want to see if you offer childbirth preparation, or I'm a postpartum mom. You know, do you have a therapist there who specializes in treating X, Y, and Z? Second, do the therapists do internal examinations? Because you can be a pelvic floor therapist or a, you know, pelvic health therapist and maybe not do internal work, but at some point you at least need to be referred out to someone if you need an internal examination, because that's the way an in-person session needs to be able to evaluate your muscles. And I know a lot of therapists out there who may disagree with me, but that's the way that you assess the muscles. And the last thing is that they should be giving you things to work on at home. You should not be on a machine the entire time. You should not be in an open gym the entire time. It's a mix of massage and manual therapy, exercise, and then teaching you education for home, so that because it's the other 23 hours of the day and, you know, 6 days a week that you're not in the clinic, that you need to be following through on some of the things. And then lastly, like, they need to listen. I think therapists need to listen more than talk, which I've shadowed many and talked to many who I'm like, okay, our patients are telling us what's wrong with them. We need to listen. And then lastly, you need to feel comfortable with them. If something does not feel right, like, don't go back. Like, find another one. It's like trying on a pair of pants. You're like, these pants don't fit. I'm going to try on another pair of pants. Just like marriage therapists or, you know, counselors. I'm like, I've seen many and I'm like, this just isn't the right fit. And so you have to kind of keep looking, unfortunately. You know, and there's the other good news is, Chrissy, is there's options now. You can do online programs. You can do virtual telehealth just to get education. You can read my book. So you do have more access to information. And my hope is that you can also advocate for care for yourself. And it's a bummer that you had. It's a total bummer that you had some bad experiences, because it takes so much courage to go. Right. But there are great therapists out there. And I want you to don't let that be the end of your story. I want you to keep looking like you did.
I can totally echo that, because once I found the right fit, once I found the person who was going to do it, like, if I could go to her every week, I would. Just the things that she's able to tell me about my body, like my posture, how I'm standing, what side I'm like too tense on and versus not. Like, it's things that, sure, I could probably assess with the right time and the right knowledge. And I'm sure reading your book is going to help tremendously. But to have somebody like just physically manipulate my whole body and say, this is why your hip is clicking. Like, it's life changing. And I recommend it to anybody, whether you've had a baby or not, whether you recently or further down the line, if you have like anything going on with your core, your back, your hips, like, check this out. You might have an issue here.
Yeah. I tell people ribs to knees. If there's anything going on in that arena, then see a pelvic floor therapist. And we'll tell you, like, I've had people come in. I'm like, actually, you're doing great. You don't really need to come back. Let me know if there's an issue. But I think most often women really benefit from education. And, you know, I just did an interview with somebody and they said, it sounds like there's a lot of reconnecting with your mind and body. And I was like, no, it's connecting. Like, we've never been taught this. It's the first time we're connecting with it. And I think every single patient has said, like, I'm so glad I did this, because it really does help you feel more empowered as a woman. It helps you feel more connected to your body and just helps you understand it. And it's really fascinating once we can understand it and we know how to take care of it. I think we feel really strong.
Amazing. Well, tell us about your book.
So Floored, A Woman's Guide to Pelvic Floor Health, comes out on June 10th. Depending on when you're listening to this, it's available for pre-order. And everyone who pre-orders gets 30 days of free pelvic floor workouts on my platform. And because I really want to make this accessible to people. I really want people just to kind of understand their bodies, but also like help their sisters, their moms, their daughters, you know, be able to have these conversations with their kids and help understand their bodies better. It goes through every age and stage from your first period to your last. So whether you're got a kiddo who's starting their period or becoming sexually active, whether you're perimenopausal or postpartum. And then there are individual chapters on like bladder health and sexual health and bowel health. So, you know, I always say read the first chapter and the last and then go to the chapters that are relevant for you. But I think you'll really learn so much. Hopefully find it a little funny. And then also feel less alone, because so many women experience these issues and they just don't know anyone else or they're not talking about it. But it's it's very common, but I also want you to know that it's very treatable.
I am confident that your book is going to be not just a little funny, but highly relatable and very welcoming and just really like you're hearing it from a friend, which is such a breath of fresh air. Tell us where we can find you.
So I'm on Instagram as The Vagina Whisperer. It's the.vagina.whisperer. And I'm on TikTok as The Vag Whisperer because TikTok doesn't like the word vagina.
Okay.
And my website is thevaginawhisperer.com. I have a pre-order floor page on there that you can go to and check it out. And I'm coming to cities across the U.S. And then so there may be some events in your city. And then you can find out more about the pre-order goodies as well. And I really hope that this helps a lot of women. And I'm just really excited to share it with the world.
Thank you so much for being here and for putting out this message, because you know how important it is to normalize this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
If you've ever laid in bed at night replaying everything you should have done differently as a mom, you'll want to stick around, because the next episode is all about mom guilt, why it shows up, how it sneaks into everything from snacks to screen time, and what you can do, starting with just 5 minutes a day, to finally let go of the shame and start giving yourself the same compassion that you give to everyone else. Let's talk about how weirdly hard it is to make friends as a mom. You want real connection, not just surface level chats at the playground, but the thought of putting yourself out there is exhausting. You've tried texting someone, but then overthought it and never hit send. Or maybe you wonder if it's just too late, like everyone else already has their mom crew. If that's you, I made something just for you. It's called Making Mom Friends. It's a 4-week guided experience to help you rebuild your confidence and start making real friendships without faking it or forcing it. You'll get journaling prompts, copy and paste texts, low pressure invites, and a weekly rhythm to actually help you connect with zero pressure to be more outgoing than you are. It's not about becoming someone else. It's about finally feeling like you and trusting that that's enough. We start working together on June 3rd and doors close on June 2nd. You can head to the link in my bio to learn more and join us. Because making friends shouldn't feel like a guessing game, and you don't need to try harder. You just need a new way.